the world is just energy. There's just an energy field around you. And so what I was doing is I was sending completely conflicting signals. And I realized that unless I center around what is most important to me, I will never get what is second, third, fourth, fifth place important to me. Why do I spend so much time on talking about failure? As long as you have shame around your past failure, you will have fear around future failure. Things that we are ashamed of, we are afraid of. If you don't take the opportunity, someone else will take the opportunity. If you are afraid of failure, you will dare not take the risks. And in doing that, you will lose the opportunities that are placed in front of you.
What if you could build a business in the modern world as big or as small as you want without having to compromise the things that were the most important to you in the very beginning? This is the Wealthy Consultant Talks podcast with Taylor Welch and Mike Walker, as they share with you today their learning lessons from stories in their experiences over the past 10 to 15 years and share with you right here, right now. Let's get into it.
We're going to talk about unlearn to relearn. Let me give you this quick template and then we're going to go into some screen share. We're going to talk about Jennifer's telling me to get back on script. There are only three things that you have to consume in terms of lessons and learning in your life. And only these three things. Let me categorize this so that we understand. And it's not a bad idea. John Maxwell says it's not experiences that teach you anything. Many people think that if you just go through an experience, you become wiser automatically. Not so. It's only experiences that are reflected upon that actually turn into lessons. And so, as we go through this, I want you to take notes on this, but I want you to spend some good time this week organizing the areas categorically that you need to unlearn, relearn, and learn for the first time. And those are the three categories. Here's the three things categorically that you must consume and learn. The first are the lessons that we have to unlearn. Unlearn, UNLEARN. It means forget about. How many of you, I'll raise my hand on this, how many of you have been through a difficult season where, if we're being honest, and that's what we are known for around here is honesty and vulnerability. If you're being honest, the lessons that you learned from that season were not actually the right lessons.
Oh, yeah.
So like, this is really difficult when the situation's traumatic. And it's easy for me to sit here and be like, yo, that's the wrong lesson. But if we had somebody that I'm close with got in a really, really horrible car accident and he almost died. And it was traumatic for him. It took him months to recover. And how many of you would imagine that getting back into a vehicle was a difficult step for him?
For sure. Been there.
Like when you are an athlete, you go through this, you break a bone or you fracture something or you pull an Achilles, you know, they say that pro athletes sometimes never recover from injuries. Well, why? It's not because the body won't recover from the energy. The body recovers from anything. It's very difficult to put your body into a state where it can't recover. But what happens is the athlete will rehabilitate, they'll go through rehab, and they will go back to that moment where they have to step back onto the court and they know they're going to have to do the exact same thing that hurt them the first time. And imagine the fear or the mental anxiety that comes from like, I'm about to have to do the exact same thing that put me into the hospital. This is difficult. That's the wrong lesson. The lessons that we learn that are not necessarily the right lessons, we have to learn how to isolate them, identify them, and let them go. The second category are the lessons that we must relearn. A lesson is repeated until it is learned. So when we go through these cyclical types of situations over and over, in fact, I just got called out on this last week. I got called out on this last week. It's like every time I try to do a certain thing, I experience the same set of conflict and the same set of resistance. And it happens again and again in my life. And this person said, look, if you are repeating this over and over, I have to start wondering, are you committed to this conflict more than you're committed to the outcome? And this is a real quick lesson that has nothing to do with this. It's not in my notes, but most serious resistance. How many of you have been through a situation where you felt resistance over an elongated period of time, years. Not like, you know, this was difficult for 2 months, but I pushed through, but not like years. I've been really challenged with this one area, the same area over and over and over and over and over again. Yeah. Almost 100% of the time, this area that you are dealing with long lasting resistance is not external resistance. It's inner conflict. So we can break this down a million different ways, but there is likely inside of you a conflict between what you really want and what you're committed to in terms of what you think should be happening or should be occurring. Let me give you an example of this if I can. Can I just give you an example? This is off script, off the cuff, but if we're on a beeline and you guys are feeling it, I'm going to chase it. If not, I'll get back on script. Jennifer's really riding me hot and heavy today. She wants me to stay on. Oh, now she says, yes, please. All right. I figured this out. This is a fresh lesson for me because I figured it out last night.
Oof.
And this isn't normal for me to come and teach on something that I figured out the night before. Okay. So last night I'm processing and I'm like, you know, we'll get into some of this today, but like the last year has just been insanely difficult. I have kind of had to battle with some weird things. Like I've tangled with people that you never want to tangle with, and I've had to clean up fires, and this has been nonstop. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to scale. I'm going to grow. I'm going to become big. This is my mantra. This is my method. This is my mission. I've got to change the world. And to be honest, all of those things are true. All of those things are true. Everything that I just said, I am not designed to be safe. I am not designed to be small. I was put on this earth, as were you, to make massive global differences. Okay? We all agree with that. If you're here, you were called to make a difference, and a big difference. Why make a small difference when you can make a big difference? And so, but I keep coming up against this glass ceiling. It's painful. It hurts. And it's confusing. And you know what I'm talking about, because you likely have experienced your own glass ceiling where you just keep bumping up against it. You can't break past it. Last night I'm processing and I have a realization that I have inner conflicts around the idea of growing. Let me tell you why. Last summer, I made a commitment that I was going to be with my kids every single morning when they woke up. They wake up at 7 o'clock in the morning. I made this commitment. I'm going to be present first as a dad. Everything can spin around that. I'm not going to sacrifice my commitment at home for my commitment to make an impact globally for other people. And many of you were here during that period where I was like recentering, right? And what I realized last night is that I had a belief system buried deep inside of me that to scale something quickly and largely requires, you guys know where this is going, requires me to grind, be gone early, come home late, and to really put on the burners in terms of what I am building, working harder. And so there was a piece of me, when you have these conflicting messages that are sent out into the world is just energy. There's just an energy field around you. And so what I was doing is I was sending completely conflicting signals. And I realized that unless I center around what is most important to me, I will never get what is second, third, fourth, fifth place important to me. So my issue was that because of my belief system, I had internal conflict, which was actually causing me to not be sure what I wanted. Everything in your life where you experience long-term resistance is because you aren't crystal clear on what you actually want. Zoom it back up to the top. If a human being is absolutely dialed in on exactly what they want and exactly what it feels like and exactly why they want it, then the world has no choice but to bow down beneath that level of clarity and command. Every outcome pays homage to our state and our process. So every single time you feel this conflict, this resistance, know this. It is not something outside of you. It is something inside. There's some conflict internally. And until you resolve that, you will spend all of your energy and all of your resources chasing two things at once and spinning in circles. Start, stop, start, stop, start, stop. Right? Does this make sense?
I love it.
The third category of things that you must learn are things that you're learning for the first time. And when we say learning things for the first time, what we're really talking about is the process of accumulating experience, information, frameworks, lessons, and turning that into wisdom. Experience has to go through a filter to be turned into wisdom. And what mistake we make sometimes is we feel that because we have a lot to learn, we feel that we are therefore not qualified to enjoy or experience what we want to experience right now. So we're going to talk a little bit in this lesson. That was my warm up. Hope you guys are still good. We're going to talk a little bit in this lesson about how to actually unlearn and reformat the hard drive, so to speak, the mental carrier of memories and experiences, reformat it so that you can move forward in a healthy way. And I'm going to share my screen, and then we're going to go through two frameworks, and then we're going to spend the rest of this lesson talking about reframing failure. Why do I spend so much time on talking about failure? Because if there is one thing that is going to, this is the secret sleeper cell killer of progress. It is the fear of failure. Why do we feel failure? Because we are ashamed of past failure. As long as you have shame around your past failure, you will have fear around future failure. Oof. Another good writer downer.
That's a good one.
As long as you have shame about past failure, you will have fear about future failure. Things that we are ashamed of, we are afraid of. Period. End of story. So all of that said, let's get into two lessons that are important and that I believe can aid your progress moving forward. Let me know if you can see my screen.
Good to go.
What do you see, guys? What do you see?
Triangle.
I am the king of triangles.
The king of triangles.
Okay. This is called the trauma rally. I was processing this last week and going through trauma and like really kind of feeling into it. By the way, sometimes if you want to grab a lesson, you feel into it. You just feel into it. How do I feel? Some people will spend their whole lives intellectually trying to figure out what they want to do, the pros and cons and the math. And what's the math say? And what's the data say? Well, like sometimes here's a little secret. Just what feels better? What feels more fun? And feeling into it. There's a difference between, my team will tell you this, there's a difference when I show up because I'm happy about doing something versus when I show up because someone scheduled me to do it and I'm obligated to do it because I have to. You can tell a difference. You can feel a difference. So sometimes one of the best ways that you can deal with trauma is you feel into it. And what's actually causing me to feel this way? Why am I feeling the way that I am? What are the triggers? And so anyways, let's get into this. This is called the trauma rally. And this is what happens in most of our lives. Because the reason it's a triangle is because all of life, just like all of nature, is scaling into upper echelon, middle echelon, and bottom. Everything works this way. If everyone is on the same level, we have artificial equality, which is called socialism. Nature doesn't work this way. Governments are not supposed to work this way. We follow nature, and nature follows the spirit. Y'all don't have time for me to go into that right now. We will run out of time. But nature is actually a reflection. And then everything physical is a chasing of nature. Let me just pop quiz for a second. How many of you agree that there are strong animals and weak animals? The idea of artificial suppression and regulation to make everything equal in strength and choice is an aberration of nature. The key with human species and the mind is that humans are one of the only animals that get to choose where we fit inside of the pack. Now, before you send a press release and start talking about how I'm a crazy person and email us, like, listen, there are some people who are born in environments where they do not have the necessary resources to get ahead as quickly as other people. But what I'm talking about today, I'm talking to a group of winners. I'm talking to a group of people who enjoy knowing what they can do to move forward. And so in nature, as in success, there are people at the top and then there are people at the bottom. And we get to choose within reason where we are going to fit into the pack. So if you are copying this down, what you have at the top is you have the top 1%, you have the trauma rally in the middle, and you have regression at the bottom. Regression and suppression stick together. By the way, if you followed any of my body of work on energy, you know that there are levels. This is based on Dr. Hawkins' research. There are levels at the bottom where you have self-perpetuating weakness. This is called victimhood. This is called apathy. What you want more than anything else is to avoid getting below that like 150-ish level where you have become a victim. Everything is happening to you because that's when it becomes self-perpetuating. If this is true, and it is, what does it mean about the energy of the top? If the bottom is self-perpetuating, is the top also self-perpetuating? What self-perpetuating means is that like creates more like. This is why the rich get richer, the poor seem to get poorer. It's because when you get into a certain state, you begin attracting the compounds of that state. If I can get you stuck in the top where you just self-perpetuate winning, even if you temporarily bump down into a trauma rally, you have the tools and the skills and the systems to push yourself back up into the top. I have done my job. But arena also exists for this area in the bottom through the other initiatives that we're doing so that we can get people reoriented around getting into the top. And that's what you guys are all going to help me do. Okay. Here's the key. When you're stuck in a trauma rally, your mindset tends to look like this. And if we could put one word on this, it would be reactivity. When you are reacting to your environment rather than commanding your environment, you are stuck in a trauma rally. You're going to loop. When people get down here at the bottom, there is no reaction. There's just apathy. So, pop quiz again for the room. When something bad happens to you around you, do you feel frustrated by it? Do you feel anything at all? Are you like, well, F that. I'm going to fix that shit. Mike, yes?
Oh, yeah.
Good. Luke? Is Luke just like living in the spirit? Nothing bothers him. And he's just like always like.
It's always good.
If you feel.
There's the yeses coming through.
If you feel, it's good news. Because what that means is that you have avoided the trap of the stagnation down here at the bottom. See, people who get stuck in this lower level energy, they don't even feel triggered by certain things that happen to them. There are speakers who are trained in Dr. Hawkins' work, and they'll go and they can feel a room, and they'll share stories about how like there was such apathy in the room that I couldn't get anyone to listen to me until I triggered them and made them angry. And once I could get them into a state where they energetically were angry, I could then use that momentum to push them up into levels of courage. But it's very hard. You don't skip from stagnation to the top 1%. You typically go through the levels. And so what this means is if you still feel, that's a good indication that you're not stuck in apathy. And here at the very top, what you have is you have control, but not the type of control that you would think. We're not talking about controlling our environment. We're not talking about controlling the government. We're not talking about controlling even our bank account. We're not talking about controlling our prospects. What are we talking about when we talk about control? We're talking about controlling the meaning of everything that happens to us, around us, and through us. Those who control the meaning of a thing control the thing itself. So here's an example of what this can feel like when you get really in state. If it works out, great. If it doesn't, even better. Something's protecting me from something I don't even see yet. The world is a mirror that reflects your relationship to it. When you are happy with the world, it is happy with you. When you are unhappy with the world, it turns away from you. When you battle with the world, it battles with you too. When you stop battling, it meets you halfway. If you simply give yourself permission to have what you envision, outer intention will find a way of giving it to you. What happens is we look in a mirror and we see the reflection, and rather than fixing what's causing the reflection, we're trying to manipulate the reflection. Imagine like your son or daughter looking at the mirror, not liking it, and trying to like fix the mirror. What would you say to them? Mm-hmm. That's not how it works. Yeah. That's not how it works. Like, if you don't like that your hair is in your face, move the hair out of your face. Move your hair out of your face. Like, don't change the mirror. So the mirror is just a reflection. Here's another quote. Using your willpower, you declare any event or circumstance favorable and to your advantage. This affirmation is not merely based on hope in the goodwill of the world. It is not derived from trust or confidence. It is not even based on optimism. It is the master's intention. You are creating the individual layer of your world, and you are the master of your personal reality. Okay, so the control that we seek at the top is through the controlling of meaning. Anytime we feel ourselves being reactive, watch it. Just watch yourself. Slow your pace down. Think about it long enough, because what oftentimes is more painful than the situation is our response reactively to the situation. That's how we can get triggered. So how do we do this actually? Like, how do we actually do it? Okay, let's talk about that. So we're talking about belief architecture, and I'm going to go really deep on that call. So we have these events, and then we have the belief and the meaning, and then we have the action. And this is actually going to be brand new IP that nobody has ever seen before. But I'm going to go quickly over this. Let's say we have an event that hurts us. Somebody give me an example real quick of an event that you're tired of happening and you don't like. So I'll just give you a random example. Let's say that you are, you lost a client. And then we have the belief or the meaning. And this belief / meaning, Angela says, it is fun for those of us who are sober too. I'm not trying to sound, we're not a bunch of junkies, okay? Sometimes it's nice to have fun.
You don't have to have a margarita, guys. It's not mandatory. It's not part of the onboarding sequence or anything.
I'm misrepresenting the brand right now. So you lose a client, and what's the meaning around this? What's your belief around this event? Well, let's say that we're in a reactive state, and the belief is that my business is declining. Okay. And therefore, the action that we take, because our business is declining and the feeling around our business is declining, we could actually throw notes underneath this. Losing money. Plan B's. What else do we think when our business is declining?
Fear of it not coming back.
Yeah. Why even try? Fear. So we have all of these derivative feelings that are kind of finding themselves underneath the main feeling. Therefore, the action might be we don't invest in mentorship. We don't spend money on ads, and we don't, or we write some shitty work because we're like trying to rush it out the door, or like rushing. Okay. Everybody see this so far? This is just a random example that I'm making up on the spot.
Got it.
When this is the way that things work, what we're doing is we are actually creating this by doing this. The belief creates the action, but the action creates the actual outcome of the belief. Everyone see that? Mm-hmm. Not spending money on mentors guarantees your business will decline. Not spending money in the ads guarantees that you have to go through plan B. Rushing things, not resting, not using flow guarantees that the fear you feel will come about. And so what we have is we have this nasty loop right here. And this is just a loop of belief architecture where one creates the other and the other creates the first, and it loops and it creates itself over and over. What most of us feel, even subconsciously, is we have the event. This is the thing that happens. And then we have the belief or the meaning that we take from that. And then we have all of the actions that come after that. And the way that we create control through this is we actually reverse engineer and we align everything under the event that we want to see. So let me give you an example of how this would work. If we reverse this action over here and aligned it under the event, let's first of all delete some of this. What does losing a client really mean? Let's fix this with some positive, empowering, high utility meanings. So you're going to have to work here a little bit, unless you just want me to tell you how to live your entire life, which I'm happy to do. But what does it mean if you lose a client? What could it mean? Mike, let's just go through this exercise. We lose a client.
The first thing that comes to mind for me is it means we have room for an even better client.
What'd you say? Your internet cut off.
It makes room for an even better client.
Right. More room. Even better client. Okay. What else? Fewer obstacles. Maybe it means that they're not the right fit. So an improved book of business.
Yeah, just more personal bandwidth.
And what do we do if we have now more room for an even better type of client? What's the action or the activity?
We start communicating with the market. We have an open door to new opportunity.
And if our book of business improved because we lost this client, what do we do? Deliver more to current book?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You guys are getting the point here. You getting the picture? This is called mapping. This is called mapping. What we're doing is we are consciously going in, we're deleting a negative belief or meaning, and in deleting and replacing the belief or the meaning, we are then fixing the actions that flow naturally out of that belief or that meaning. When we come down to like setting vision, and this is especially important as we enter the holidays, and we'll probably do a series or two on setting goals and targets for Arena and for the TWC crew. What we want is we want to enlarge the event, the desired event, in our minds. Okay. So let's say we have an event up here. We're going to reverse this mapping around on its head. We lose a client. We want to delete the beliefs and fix the actions, but let's actually let's actually get into a centered control state. And what centered control state means, we are reverse engineering from a future destination into the present. Let's take the best event possible as it relates to this particular situation. Mike, when you think about losing clients and keeping clients and getting clients and all these things, what's the biggest, best, most exciting outcome that you can imagine for a client service team or a business like ours? Describe it to me.
Our clients are achieving their objectives. They are actively engaging in the community and the discussions and the events, and they're telling their networks about us and about the outcomes that they're having.
Got it. So referrals. Mm-hmm. And how many referrals are there?
I guess I need context. Like, are we talking a week, a month?
This is the point of this exercise. And by the way, Mike is not prepped on these before hopping in, which is how you know that it's a real exercise. We don't put parameters on it like that. How many? How big?
We have 20 a month coming in.
20 a month. And how many active clients would you say? We're talking about best case.
Okay. Of our top tier, 300.
And what describes those clients? How would you describe them?
ICP1, baby. They're the best of the best within their categories. They're phenomenal humans inside and outside of their business. They're givers, not takers. They're high energy, high output.
Okay. For the sake of time, do you guys understand? Do you see what's happening right here? We're actually describing the best case scenario that we can imagine. And what I would do with Mike is I would tell him that these goals have to be way bigger so that they're exciting. So what about 7,000 active clients? You got to get to the level where you feel a little bit like, oh, this is crazy. Because that is the level of excitement required to pull you through all of the way. And so this is an event in the future. It doesn't have to be this Christmas. It doesn't have to be next Christmas. But let's say that there were 7,000 clients and 450 referrals per month. Okay. What would that mean from a belief standpoint? What would that mean? Would that mean that we're the best in the world or the worst in the world? The biggest or the smallest? What would that say about us? Let's put a meaning on this that is not transactional, but let's take it and turn it into a meaning. Mm-hmm. If we hit these numbers, what does it mean, Mike?
It means we're delivering as promised and up to our best abilities. Like we're bringing it for our clients.
Trustworthy.
We're excited internally. Our team is firing on all cylinders. Our belief
enthusiasm.
Our belief levels are super high and confidence levels are high. Our operating systems are fully dialed in.
Are we reactive or proactive?
Proactive, predictive, future tense.
Okay. Beautiful. And then what actions, if these things are true, need to be taken or will you be taking when this is real? What would you spend your day on?
Yeah. Communicating what's being done. Belief level is going to push the actions. Those actions are going to spur the results so that we're going positive flywheel now.
So if Mike were to spend an hour doing this, what he would come up with is a list of activities that he would probably spend his day-to-day doing. And because the activity creates the outcome that we're believing for, which then flows through into the event, when we start this way, this gives us a roadmap for sitting down, deciding any future that we want, then building out why we want it. Why do we want it? That's the meaning. So we're taking it from a meaning to a reason why. Why do we want this number? Because we're trustworthy and we're excited and we are dialed and we are proactive and it makes us predictive. And then we get the list of activities that can make it actually happen. And belief architecture will go super deep into the things that can actually block that. Do we understand this enough for us to actually do it? Because what this is more than anything else is a framework operating system for us to actually remove any hindrances, any beliefs that are not utility for where we're going and replace them with new ones. And while you're answering that question, I'm going to share with just a few things about failure, and then we're going to be on our way. Failure is a good thing as long as it does not become a habit. We're just talking about failure because failure is the thing that blocks us from learning. Once avoiding failure becomes your motivation to do things, you have embarked upon a path of laziness and powerlessness. This is from a man who was the richest man in the world for many years. He's writing letters to his son, and he's speaking over his son lessons that I feel like are important for all of us to really learn and take forward. He said, "When I first stepped into the business world and prayed to God to bless our new company, a catastrophic storm hit us. At the time, we had signed a contract." This just dates the book. "We had signed a contract to buy a large amount of beans."
Whoa.
It's been a long time since we studied entrepreneurs selling beans.
Yeah.
"But we did not expect the sudden visit from frost that would come and crush our dreams. Half of the beans we got were destroyed, and some unscrupulous suppliers also added sand, small beans, and straw. The business was destined to fail, but I know that I cannot be depressed, let alone be immersed in failure. Otherwise, I will drift further away from my goals and dreams." Somebody alive at the time of this author was Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln, after his second business failure, it took him 10 years to pay off his debts. 10 years.
Jeez.
10 years. Most entrepreneurs that get started in the game, they're like, they don't even comprehend 10 years of paying off debt. "There is no free lunch in the world, and it is even more impossible to maintain status quo. If you stay still, you will regress. But to move forward, you must be willing to make decisions and take risks. Evading risk is almost a guarantee of bankruptcy. But when you take advantage of the opportunity, you are also depriving others of the opportunity just to guarantee yourself a shot." The reason he's saying this is because in his business, he lived in a zero-sum world with zero-sum games. And I think that the world has shifted around, but he's teaching it to his son as a lesson of failure. If you don't take the opportunity, someone else will take the opportunity. If you are afraid of failure, you will dare not take the risks, and then lose. In doing that, you will lose the opportunities that are placed in front of you. Therefore, in order to avoid losing opportunities and retain your qualifications for competition, it is worthwhile to pay for your failures and your setbacks. The key in unwinding trauma around your failure is to put a price on it and to commoditize them. Every time you go through a failure, you are paying transactionally for a lesson. If you've gone to school and you've paid for a degree, you have paid for that lesson. If you've paid for a mentor and you've gone through the price of admission to pay the mentor, you've got to learn and train yourself. And this is what I'm doing as well. I'm just in this with you, is training ourselves to see failure as a tuition. It is simply a commodity cost. We are paying money, and the exchange for that money is the lesson in and of itself for us to advance.